The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. She got a natural way, her hips sway furiously, yet luxuriously. Carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you've seen this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we loving on and what we hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, punk-ass Republicans and punk-ass Democrats and what you should do about it, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time, a changing time. It's a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
You know I can't always fathom everything that you say about half the time. But when I hear your voice, you support your voice with all of that body language, girl, it's all right.
Our guest this week, I feel like I've been waiting for this for almost a year now. It's on. Our guest this week is a media personality and journalist. He recently won an Academy Award, y'all, as an executive producer for the short film Two Distant Strangers. He's the co-host of the podcast Higher Learning, where he and Rachel Lindsay break down the biggest topics in Black culture, politics, and sports. I know we're going to break a few things down today, so please, please welcome to the pod my friend Van Lathan. What's up, Van? Hey!
I'm good. How you doing, sister?
You know what? I'm feeling fantastic. I'm feeling great. I'm just fresh off a trip to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I was describing to you pre-record how I figured out how to do it right. So I'm feeling good. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm back on the basketball court, which is important for me.
That's what's up. What you doing out there?
I'm to the point in life to where everything has to be specialized. Like, look, when people would say that you were going to get old and then your body wasn't going to respond, and I didn't think that they were telling the truth.
Oh, they're telling the truth.
I now have a special basketball trainer. I'm one of those guys, you see me, we're doing drills, we're doing all of that stuff. So for me to get ready to start playing again, so I'm taking it serious.
Oh, this is a big deal. I didn't know you were a player in your past. Can you break that down for us real quick?
Oh, my God. Hoop. Look, basketball is the best therapy that I've ever had.
Mm.
Because remember, it's me, it's Big Cuddly Van. So quick story. When I was in like the fourth grade, they put me in like the gifted program at my school.
Well done.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Okay. Appreciate
it's hard to get up in that thing. They don't want us in there.
They don't. And
they
by
really
the way,
don't.
They really don't. And do you know how it happened? It happened. It always happens because of one teacher. We took the leap test, and I scored in a certain percentile on the leap test, and there was one teacher that was like, you should think about putting your boy in the gifted program. And my mother and my mom was like, really? And she was like, yeah. Yeah. Because the rest of them, they basically make them color something, and then they say, oh, my God, they're so talented, and they put them in there. But for me, like I tested into it. Then I had to take an IQ test, whatever, whatever. But I remember when I was in the gifted program, all my classmates were white, like right away, to your point.
Facts.
Like right away, all my classmates were white.
Mm-hmm.
And during that point, I remember my mother came up to me. My mother went, hey, listen, you're going to have a decision to make right now about whether or not you're going to be. Her point was that I could look at this two ways. I wasn't going to school with the kids that I was in the neighborhood with, and I could be angry about that, or I could open up and be ready for the experience and try to learn more about my new classmates. And I chose number two, and that stuck. So whenever you meet me throughout life, I'm always going to ask a ton of questions about you. I'm always going to be super into what's going on with you and super nice and polite about it. Basketball gives me the opportunity to be an asshole.
Yeah.
No one that plays basketball with me is like, I like playing with Vane. Like, nobody. Hey, get back on defense. Rotate. Bro, are you going to play? Like, the whole game. And all of these guys, all my homies, the whole game. And I during COVID, not having that release of having a place to, like, put my anger and my frustration and my aggressiveness, it was hard, you know?
I understand. I'm glad you ain't hurt nobody. So let me ask you a question I'm asking everybody who's come on the pod for the last year and a half, and I'm just going to keep it going, honey, until this panty is over.
Uh-huh.
But it's not over, actually, and we are still, for now, in a panini, a panorama, a ponderosa, because the rules still are in lots of places to wrap it up and back it up. So I got to ask, what has your quarantine life been like? And have you developed any unique habits live and direct from Miss Rona?
Quarantine almost killed me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready for quarantine. Quarantine was exceptionally hard. And for anybody who has mental health issues or anyone that's dealt with anxiety or for anybody out there who keeps waiting for the world to end and then you're right there and you think that it's finally here,
mm-hmm.
I stopped sleeping. I tried a bunch of different medications mm-hmm. till we found one that worked. I had to do an intensive outpatient program where it's just shy of actually having to have yourself like actually committed. But I really am thankful for the people at One-to-One that I worked with, because in a time where I just had no mental rudder, it gave me some structure and a place to like some people to talk to. So for me, the isolation, the feeling of impending doom and danger, it's hard for me to ignore. And it's another thing about people like me and obviously people like yourself, it's hard for me to ignore big problems.
Yeah.
So everybody is like, hey, it's cool, we'll just order in. I'm like, people are getting sick and dying.
Right. Like, the air you're breathing is dangerous.
Yes.
Right.
See a human being. I used to be somebody walking to me, hey, sir, how are you? See a human being, they cross the street. It's like it's a reminder every single time. So it was rough. It was tough. It was hard.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that, because I think for a lot of people, folk were trying to get through it. And even though we were weirdly opening up our lives to people in ways that we hadn't before, because we kind of had to, because, you know, people were seeing your draws and your slip was showing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, everything was about cameras and not avatars, right? So
right.
It was different. But I don't think we talk enough about the emotional and spiritual and psychological impacts of this quarantine. And I also developed anxiety during the quarantine. I started getting anxiety attacks. I'd never had that before. And it freaked me out. It really freaked me out. And a lot of it had to do, some of it was about being on lockdown and being in the same four walls. I'm a homebody anyways. And when things were open, I was always wanting to be in the same four walls. So It wasn't that for me. It was actually the reemergence, right, of this movement to millions and going back through all of that stuff that we had gone through in 2013 and 2014 and people rediscovering you in good ways and in bad ways, right? It was like the FBI showing up at your house and being like, somebody's trying to kill your ass. It was the people who were like, how come I'm not getting credit and recognition? It was like bringing all that shit back. And I couldn't sleep. And I was sitting on my couch one night and I couldn't breathe and I couldn't catch my breath. And it took me a while to figure out, oh, yeah, you got to change everything that you're fucking doing right now.
Like,
you got to change everything you're doing. I started riding a bike, not because I wanted to be healthier, although that is an output, right? It's an outgrowth of it, but really because it helps me get work stuff through my body. I started seeing a therapist every week. you know, and just putting the shit on the table. She white too. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I was like, I need help.
Yeah. Right? If you're really determined, if you're turning today, hey.
I'm like, look, I got to tell somebody.
Any port in the storm.
I say all this because anytime someone has the courage to be honest with me, like, actually, it wasn't all fucking good. Fuck your sourdough starter. I was really struggling. I feel compelled to also be like, I was struggling right next to you. Thank you for saying it. And I'm glad we started this conversation off that way. Lady Don't Take No will be right back after this important message. Hello, Lady Don't Take No listeners. I want to tell you about a new podcast I think everyone needs to hear from one of my favorite recent guests and my friend. It's called Be Anti-Racist, and it's hosted by the esteemed Dr. Ibram X. Kendi. On the show, Dr. Kendi discusses policies and practices that have sustained injustice in our society and how we can dismantle racism to build a just, equitable world. Alongside guests like Julian Castro, Jemele Hill, Don Lemon, Heather C. McGee, and Mariam Kaba, Dr. Kendi ties the past to the present, inviting listeners to consider what an anti-racist future might look like and laying out strategies to achieve one. An anti-racist future depends on all of our actions, and Be Anti-Racist will help us understand precisely how to build one. Listen to Be Anti-Racist wherever you get your podcasts. In the face of what I do actually think is a pending apocalypse, I don't think we're all going to die, but I think things are irrevocably changed and changing. But in the face of the pending apocalypse, are there any new skills that you learned during the Rona? I got to know what you bring into the table.
I tried, right? I tried to learn some new skills. I tried to learn skills that are very important. I tried to learn how to make beats.
Oh,
like I tried to do a couple of things, but I couldn't focus on anything long enough. But what I realized is that during this future time that you're talking about, maybe distant, maybe not too distant, I already have skills that are useful.
There we go. What you got?
I can fish.
Okay.
I can hunt. From down home in Louisiana.
Okay.
I'm good with a firearm. Yes. And I have an impeccable sense of direction because of where I'm from. And all of these things, I'm telling you, it's going to be me. The care of, I actually wrote a treatment for a movie and nobody steal this because I've already,
it's written. Happen. I already copyrighted it, trademarked it, all the shit.
I wrote a treatment for a movie called 27 Miles to Compton. And it's about a post-apocalyptic scenario like this where there's a black man and a black woman who are in charge of ushering people to the last free zone here in Los Angeles, which is in Compton.
I love this.
Right. And so it goes back and forth from their first date when they were learning all of these things about one another, uh-huh. right? Some things that they like she didn't like the fact that he was so into guns then. But then when you jump forward, it comes in handy. You know what I mean?
That.
He didn't like the fact that she spent too much time going to her kickboxing classes, but she can kick people's ass. You know,
okay.
So, and it was inspired by the fact that I didn't learn anything new, but I learned that what I can already do is pretty useful.
You know what? I really like that. And in fact, when the shit hits the fan, I'm calling you. I'll be like, where are you at? Tell me how to get to you, first of all, and then tell me how to stick with you. Cause Lord, I can't shoot no gun, contrary to popular opinion on the right. But anyways, we're going to come back to that another time. So, let me ask you this, because I also have been asking my guests this question, and it was really kind of a fluke the first time I asked it, but I got such good responses that I'm just going to keep it going. Who you got on the next versus battle? Like, who do you think should be in the next versus battle?
Ooh. Okay, so here's the thing about Versus to me. Versus has to find a way to get Usher into the Versus.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
We're just missing too many hits.
Uh-huh.
They have to find a way to get two people, Usher and Mary J. Blige.
Oh, shit.
The problem is there's only like two or three people that Usher and Mary J. Blige can go against. People keep saying Mary J. versus Mariah, which would be monumental. People keep saying Usher versus Justin Timberlake, which I guess would be a cultural battle of some sort. So I think it's interesting that Versus is giving us Versus battles that aren't as big a deal as some of the ones that we have when we're in quarantine. So for me, I propose that you split the difference and you just do, you really have a cultural civil war, really.
Oh, shit.
And you put Mary J. Blige against Usher.
See, this is exactly what Mark Lamont Hill said.
Oh,
and
did
I he? Was like, I don't know. But he organized me to this side and I agree with you.
I'm gonna be real.
That would be ill.
She gonna smoke him. She can't be beat.
Are they gonna have Drake in the, I guess, who would Drake be up against?
Drake's not gonna do something like that.
No, it wasn't.
I really mean it. So I'll tell you why I think he wouldn't do it, and I'm not speaking for him, but the reason why I think he wouldn't do it is because guys like that, part of their reputation is built around like never losing. I'm always on top. I'm the kind of this. I'm this. I'm the number one guy. And if you put them in a situation to where they lose three or four songs and people are vibing with, they don't like that type of stuff. They don't like to be that vulnerable in front of everyone. So I don't think he would do it.
He can't lose, though. He has about 85,000 songs. So,
but it's the 20 best, though. The 20 best Pac songs against the 20 best Drake songs. Pac is beating Drake.
Oh, done. But also, Pac is a better rapper.
You think Pac is a better rapper than Drake?
I do. And I love me some Aubrey.
Yeah.
Except
just rapping. I'm not talking about the songs.
Flow.
Just rapping. Flo. You think Pac raps better than Drake? If we just talking about rapping, Drake raps better than Pac.
Maybe it's a Bay thing. I don't know. I feel like stylistically and also content-wise.
Content-wise, it's not close.
You know, I mean, there's only so many songs I can hear about a girl that you can't get close to. But you want to get close to her, but you can't tell her you want to get close to her, so you just go be alone? Fuck that. Pac was talking about some real shit. And he was also talking about sipping on Alizé. He was well-rounded.
He was. Duality.
I'm going to take us all the way back because I feel like this last year was like the lost year, right? So I have to like remind us of the shit that happened before before the 2020. So I'm going to say you moved on from TMZ, which I think we can all agree is a good thing.
Yes.
I feel like TMZ is a mixed bag for me. But if there was anything I did like about it, which was not that much, but it was the dish on literally all the dumbest shit happening in America with Americans. Mm-hmm. And it was the way you delivered it in particular. The one story I cannot get out of my head, though, is how that lady Alec Baldwin is married to pretended to be a Latina.
Hilaria Baldwin.
She renamed herself Hilaria, which isn't even a fucking name in the Spanish language.
Man, Hilaria Baldwin.
It was like exposed a year ago, but I swear to God, if you bring it up to me today, I will cackle about it for a fucking week straight. So what is the latest pop culture news like that that you just cannot get out of your head?
Oh, man. What a good question. You know, there's less than you think, but there's a running thing right now that I really enjoy watching. All right, because I was never the biggest fan of celebrity news. I just like to talk shit.
Sure.
And so it worked there. Yeah, so I never really kept up with too much of it. Like when I was on TMZ, I never watched the show.
Yeah.
I never watched it. And I never read the website, which was probably bad. I should have been reading the website a little bit more. But I think right now, the thing that I'm most interested in is Soulja Boy as a person.
Oh.
Soulja Boy is to the point in life to where he wants his recognition for everything that he's ever done in life. And it doesn't matter what you have. Soulja Boy will see some people on the airplane. He'd be like, rappers weren't on airplanes before me. Soulja Boy will see some rappers in a restaurant. Soulja Boy will be like, rappers weren't in restaurants before me. He'd be like, I took Drake to Zaxby's. Drake oh wasn't God. On Zach. Drake wasn't on Zaxby's before me. You know, Soulja Boy see a rapper using the computer, he'd be like, "There were no computers in rap before I brought them." And you know what the crazy thing is? The crazy thing is, on its face, you want to just be like, oh, Soulja Boy's crazy. But then he'll have weirdly compelling arguments for all of this stuff. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Like, weirdly compelling arguments to where you go,
that's so... where you actually stop and think about it. Is yeah. it possible that this is shit it... didn't happen before Soulja Boy?
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, like, did Soulja Boy make computers in rap cool? Because he did get popping off MySpace, and I can't remember too many guys that were using it like he was using it. I'm like, damn. Does he have a point? And that's kind of the thing that I've been fighting. And when I tell you everything, it'll be like a specific studio, like Icebox Studios in Atlanta or something. He'd be like, I made Icebox. Nobody was going there before me. I'm like, you got it, bro. I love that God. Kind of confidence from a black man.
This is too good. Okay, so a political question. Here we are. Juneteenth is coming up. We done survived the commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre and all the bullshit surrounding that commemoration. We have survived it, marked safe, okay? Black communities saved this trash-ass country twice in the matter of months, and yet we are still very much wanting by way of policy change. It's the second time Joe Biden got caught on a hot mic telling some legacy groups that he ain't finna do shit for Black people. It's got me thinking about so much, but the question I wanted to ask you here is this. From your perspective as a journalist, as a creative, what do you think is the story of right now? And if you had your way in a year, what would you want the story to be?
Hmm. Interesting. Fantastic question. Wow.
Thank you.
I think the story of right now is an empire in decline in 4K. Mm. So it's funny. you read all of these stories, right? You read stories about the failure of the Roman Empire. And then the reason why the Roman Empire failed is because, well, one of the reasons, I read something that said because the empire itself became too decentralized. So as the Roman Empire spread, you had people that were more loyal to generals than they were to Rome. Even in that movie Gladiator, Maximus, who Marcus Aurelius asked to be the emperor of Rome, Maximus says, I do everything that I do for Rome. And then Marcus Aurelius says, but you've never been to Rome. Mm. So you don't know how the people there are, right? And what ended up happening was people begin to not have a fundamental understanding of the central identity of what was binding them and bringing them together. So after that, they become loyal to different generals, a little fiefdom start, it ends. This is different. Hmm. This is the exact opposite. This is people being overly informed on what America is. This is people being overly educated on what the true nature of the country is. Because the indoctrination of an American, specifically a Black American, is one that is intensely symbolic and begins when you first begin to read, right? You first begin to read and they say, there was this guy named Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, shit.
And this is what they do. They teach you, really, the way that indoctrination happens to young Black minds in schools, it happens almost in the same way that, like, you see stuff like biblical stories. They say, hey, things were like this, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people that went up against everything, and guess what? They won.
Oh, shit.
And, like, the questions I never thought to ask was, like, well, why didn't they want us eating in the same place as them? Mm. Like, why did we live in different places? Why were we poor? Why? Like, and really, if you look around, you'd see, hey, well, they about to come to cut the lights off here right now. Forget about 1965. We're in 1985, and we're hiding under the couch so that the people to come take the furniture back think that we're not home.
That's right.
So it's like you think about it and you go, okay, don't worry about that, though, because you could be Michael Jordan or Oprah Winfrey. So consider that. That's your thing. Forget about everything else. And a couple people in your neighborhood that do, that are caught up in these things, people will tell you that these people are crazy. Or in this case, one of them was my mother, that she was always fretting about something or worrying about something, and the world wasn't this bad of a place. Mm-hmm. Now, we can see in pure 4K what's not working. Mm-hmm. But more to the point, we can see that no one has any interest in changing it. And they're not whispers of guys that got killed in by police in Georgia or Alabama or New York. They're not news clippings anymore. Yep. It's right there in your face. Yep. You're seeing people who are poor. You have a once in a century health crisis to come through and expose the cracks in the American foundation and in American citizenry. And it's all right there for you. And so the story of right now is just watching and trying to figure out who, if anyone, can plug this hole. In a year, I would like to have seen somebody be brave enough to take up that fight. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the people that's brave for a living, because I know they're going to be brave. I know you're going to be brave. Mm-hmm. I know everybody out there organizing, they brave for a living. They're mm-hmm. going to be brave. We've been relying on them for a long time. I'm talking about one of these people that every 4 years, every 2 years gets us all whipped up and says that they're going to really, really make a go at it here. I want to see if any of them has the fortitude to do so. And to be honest with you, I don't think they do. Mm-mm. I think they would rather actually put on kente cloth and kneel.
Oh, shit. The kente cloth from China. That's what took me. Anyways.
Put on kente cloth and kneel. then actually keep your cousin out of jail.
Yeah.
So, long-winded answer, but what I will say is I think the story right now is the observation. And the story of the future is anyone going to be an obstacle in the way of America's oblivion? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that I see that. Yeah.
I really like that. I think I like the way you answered that question. I like it a lot, because what I've had on my mind for the last couple of days is that it's time for a turn up. And I agree with you 100%. The fact that Joe Biden could get caught on a hot mic twice saying the shit that Donald Trump was at least saying in person, out loud and unafraid. He was like, oh, I'm not going to do shit for black people. But the fact that he could keep doing that when black people gave him a job in the first place is really telling, and it should be telling to us. And I think where people tend to go with it, right, is like, well, that's why we shouldn't vote. I'm like, oh, no. You're not completing the sentence. Mm-hmm. You should vote. And it's important to vote, and not just for the sake of voting, but for the sake of weighing in on the decisions that impact your life every day. Mm-hmm. And when people disappoint you, there should be consequences. And so I'm waiting for that part, and I'm stirring the pot. I was just stirring my team up today. You know, I want it to be like, you know how when Brett Kavanaugh was getting confirmed, mm-hmm. they were having all these hearings and women turned up. And I remember I was in Atlanta getting ready for something, and I had the TV on because I was watching these hearings, and I just heard this blood-curdling scream, right? And it was like some woman who just didn't have shit else to give a fuck about. You know what right. I mean? Like, yeah. She was just like, I am going to stop this with my body if I have to.
Right.
And I feel like that's what time it is. And if we don't get there, then I do. I actually think you're absolutely right. It is the decline of the empire. So I agree with you 100% there. I actually learned a lot about you doing some research. One article said that you are very private and never talk about your private life. And I was going to go ahead and ask you about your damn private life. But then I was like, well, if the nigga private, let him stay private. So instead, I picked this question, which is that I read that you had an epic weight loss journey. I had no idea.
Oh.
And that you have a book coming out sometime soon about just that. So can you tell us a little bit about the project? Tell me what motivated you to want to lose weight. And also, what is your orientation towards this in a culture that values dieting over health? You know, a culture that kind of tells Black people we're like inherently unhealthy. Like, how are you situating yourself in this dialogue? And what are you bringing to the table?
So here's my thing. The name of the book is Fat, Crazy, and Tired.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I felt like my experience in America has made me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for me, there's a specific shame that I have attached to my body. And it's like, I'm really good at shame. Like, I'm super good at shame. I'm like better at shame than anything else. You know, sometimes I just wait to the point that I can disappoint somebody to where they're like, there's the real me. You've seen the worst. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for me, I've like, even right now I've put on like 35 pounds since the pandemic started because of one medication that I was on. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for me to be happy. Mm-hmm. So when I see the body positivity people, I'm annoyed by them because I wish, like I really do wish, but just for a lot of things that I like to do, when my weight's up, it's harder for me to play basketball. So I just like being a little slimmer. Mm-hmm. I think the way that I look at my weight loss journey, the reason why I lost weight is because I didn't feel like I could really be the me that I wanted to be at the size that I was at. I was like 370 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm not anywhere near there right now, but I was pretty big. And I wanted to make decisions in my life that put me on the road to peace. Mm. And one of the most violent situations I see in our community has nothing to do with guns. It has nothing to do with arguments. It has to do with the violence that is placed upon us by food deserts, by insufficient nutrition, mm-hmm. by alcohol and drug abuse, all things that are fed to communities, especially the community that I live in right now. And so you can't really have peace anywhere else if you don't have peace in your body, right? So I wanted to try to achieve that. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. I'm a 6'4" South Louisiana boy, and I don't like to do nothing more than I like to eat. Mm-hmm. A good sit and eat. Well, we just eating and sitting.
Yeah.
We're not even gonna walk it off.
Yep.
We gonna eat, we're gonna give it time to digest, we're gonna go again.
That's right.
All right. And I love it. But I think we do have to, for the entire thing, we just have to talk about what it is that serves us, right? And the way I look at it is this. Having a decent blood pressure serves you. Having a decent cholesterol serves you. Having all of those things serves you. Trying to adhere to somebody else's body or beauty standard, it just doesn't serve you. Mm-hmm. And we could talk about the ways that it might serve you on the back end, but until you find peace within yourself, with who you are and what you're supposed to be, and I know that sounds like a cliche, you're not ever going to be beautiful enough for somebody else. Mm. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn, right? Hard lesson for me to learn was that I lost a whole bunch of weight, but I still couldn't take my shirt off at the beach. And I looked pretty good, but it was like I was looking at Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
And if that's your standard, then you're just not going to be able to do it. So the only thing I would prioritize for everyone is health. And the thing about health is there's no one way. People's bodies are different. We're all different. So what's healthy for you might not be healthy for me. Like at 240 pounds, at 235 pounds, I look real thin. Mm-hmm. I'm just built different. So health is about maintaining a relationship with your healthcare professionals if you can afford those, if you have those, or maintaining guidelines and standards in your life where you feel good. And that's the journey that I'm on, really. Not even looking good, but feeling good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most important thing.
And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number one, act like don't come here is a sensible, humane immigration policy. Now this week, Vice President Kamala Harris went to Guatemala to meet with the president there about immigration reform and other key issues. In her speech, she told migrants, do not come, do not come. Now, some of y'all tried to accuse me of not listening to the whole thing. So let me just give y'all the actual text of what she said, because I always bring receipts. So she quotes, and I want to emphasize that the goal of our work is to help Guatemalans find hope at home. At the same time, I want to be clear to folks in the region who are thinking about making that dangerous trek to the United States-Mexico border, do not come. Do not come. The United States will continue to enforce our laws and secure our border. There are legal methods by which migration can and should occur, but we, as one of our priorities, will discourage illegal migration. And I believe if you come to our border, you will be turned back. So let's discourage our friends, our neighbors, our family members from embarking on what is otherwise an extremely dangerous journey, where in large part, the only people who benefit are coyotes. Now, that's the full text of what she said on this piece, and it was still whack. Now, I have to say, this one hit me in my gut. It was the wrong tone, the wrong tenor, the wrong message, and it was the wrong way forward. First off, this read like a bad PSA to get vaccinated. If you believe that no one really wants to leave their home and their communities and the people they love unless they feel they absolutely have to in order to escape abuse, violence, terror, or no opportunities, then why are you telling a motherfucker to tell their friends and their neighbors and communities not to leave? Why not enforce that the United States will always provide safety for those who are not safe? And put the onus on the country they are fleeing from to get it the fuck together. Furthermore, the United States both contributes to and benefits from the destabilization of governments throughout Latin America. This is well documented. The CIA, yes, that's the United States CIA, helped to depose a democratically elected government in Guatemala under the guise of democracy, and got the fucking nerve to talk about corruption. Now, if you really want the facts on facts, the United States has basically been funding corruption in Guatemala since the 1960s. So no, Madam Sis, that ain't it. If you want Guatemalans to find hope at home, that means we need to be a better global partner. And frankly, no amount of sloganeering can cover that up. We put babies in cages, but we want to lecture people about what they do in their countries, and it's a weird flex. Also, yes, Lady saw the thing on visas. She saw the thing on supporting agribusiness. And what I think about that is that mainly, frankly, it's about pursuing the interests of corporations in the region, not making people do better and not giving people dignity. Lady also has seen the thing about joint task forces of state agencies not focused on stability, but on security, which are two very different things also. And yes, I saw the thing on the Rona vaccines, which frankly, we should be doing. But if you ask me, the best part about that press conference was making sure people have access to the vaccine. But that's it, honey. That's it. Wrong tone, wrong message, wrong way forward. Lady Harris said the famous Jeffrey Toobin, who you'll remember was literally caught with his pants down on a work call. And yes, I got friends and colleagues who were on that call, folks. And let me tell you, they are still traumatized at the sight of that man's penis. Jeffrey Toobin has been reinstated at CNN. Now, this is proof positive that there really is no such thing as cancel culture when it comes to white guys. None whatsoever. And I want to remind you that it's really not actually a thing, except a conservative talking point meant to gaslight you into thinking that white guys are oppressed. Here's a freebie. They're not. And white maledom is alive and well and thriving. Nothing to see here, folks, except a man who got his job back after yanking his wang in a professional setting. Okay, so but here's what we want more of this week. Number one, The Shy. I really like this show that Lena has going on here. This season is giving me life, especially the dive into police violence. I like how they're layering these characters. Keisha having the baby of her kidnapper and seeking to give it up for adoption. Emmett learning how to be a real partner and fighting to break learned patterns. How the souls of Black boys are crushed systematically. I highly recommend you get into it if you have not already. Other things Lady loves this week is fighting for your rights. Well, folks, even though Joe Manchin, the not-so-illustrious Democratic senator from West Virginia, will not fight to protect your right to vote, Black Voters Matter is on the case. The fam has been fighting hard to make sure we strengthen voting rights across the country. So much so that they are launching a freedom ride from the South to Washington, D.C. The tour kicks off on Saturday, June 19th, from both Jackson, Mississippi and Birmingham, Alabama. And then it'll stop off in Nashville, Tennessee, Atlanta, Georgia, Columbia, South Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, Charleston, West Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, before bringing the bus to Washington, D.C. Now, I'm told they really, really need folks to show up in West Virginia and in Washington, D.C. So please get out there and get on the bus. And if you can't make it there, you can always, always place a call to your senator and let them know exactly how you feel about protecting our right to vote. To learn more about the bus tour, you can visit blackvotersmatter.org. And to contact your United States senator, you can visit our Electoral Action Center at blackfutureslab.org. This was well worth the wait. Honestly, I am so excited that you are on. I really like you. You are the shit. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. The first of many conversations, and hopefully we can do some organizing. And look, this is the way I say it. If we can't stop the decline from happening in 4K, the least we can do is build some really comfortable seats to watch.
That's right. I love that. Tell the people listening how they can find you on the socials if you want them to.
At Van Lathan on Instagram and Twitter. And then Higher Learning with Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay on the Ringer Podcast Network. Before I go, I want to say one thing.
Anything?
Everybody out there, you guys all have your opinions and y'all have your different things. You guys think about protecting Black people. We always say people. Think about protecting Black persons. One person. How what you're doing is affecting one life. The sister that I'm talking to right now told some people a little while ago how their support or willing to work with or whatever, their proximity to certain people was making her life harder and how people were there putting her actual safety at risk. Mm-hmm. I don't care about your opinions. You love Black people. Their safety and sanity has to come first.
That's right.
If someone's telling you that somebody is trying to kill them,
that's right.
Just please listen.
That's right. I appreciate that. You know, we got some growing to do.
Yeah.
We got some growing to do. And I've said this many times on the podcast before, but I'm going to say it again because it's my fucking podcast. I can say what I want. If you got more smoke for your own fucking people than the people who are actually trying to kill you, something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You ain't living right.
Right.
You ain't living right. I don't care what it is, honey. You ain't living right. Man, you are the shit. Thank you for coming on. All right, that's it for me. And that's it for Lady Don't Take No. But I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where there's a good chance you might be commuting again. We appreciate you joining us and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what you like, tell us what's on your mind, and tell us what you ain't gonna take no more of. I love this show so much. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about things you hear on this show all over our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. And a special shout out to Jahari Farrar for making sure the people get what they need from our socials. We appreciate you. Please subscribe and write a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our illustrious producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Lateryx. This pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. And I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, you cannot promote democracy in one place and crush it in another. And fighting for your rights will never go out of style. Oh, and keep it in your pants, especially when you're on a work call. That's right, I said it, because lady don't take no.
Lady don't take no, she insists on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like people stare curious. Like, she got a natural way, her hips sway furious. Like, get luxurious, like, there is a self.
Love y'all.